How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hey everyone, welcome to the latest Rain and Jay's podcast. I'm John Corrales, along with Jay King. Wherever you are, under however much snow you're buried under, thank you for tuning in as Jay and I talk about the $2.1 billion Boston Celtics. Jay, those guys are getting rich off of this team, man. $2.1 billion.
Yeah, I want to say the current ownership group bought them for $350 million.
Something like that.
In 2003 or 2004. So it's now worth, by my math, like six times maybe.
Something like that. Yeah.
So that is a lot of money. The NBA is booming. The owners absolutely won the last CBA. Oh. And the salary cap is about to go nuts. We are about to see. I saw somewhere a report that guys like Ryan Anderson are going to make the max. Ryan Anderson. If Ryan Anderson becomes a max player, and Isaiah Thomas is making $7 million a year,
right?
the world will be a strange one.
Because the max now it's not really, it doesn't mean anything anymore. It's just whatever. $20 million or whatever, however much money for Ryan Anderson in a $100 million cap in a couple of years, that's nothing. That's going to be like whatever. So
I mean, I still don't want to be paying Ryan Anderson $20 million.
Of course not. But think about what Kevin Durant, those guys are going to make $40 million. That is something like that. They're going to be making like $30 and $40 million a year eventually.
Yeah. I mean, the money.
Russell Westbrook. What is Steph Curry going to make in 3 years, 4 years?
A lot more than he makes right now. Because his deal is outrageous right now.
Yeah. Unbelievable. What's Kelly Olynyk going to make?
Double max. He is. they are going to set a new max contract.
We're
going to
make the Kelly
Olynyk
rule. Kelly Olynyk on fire lately. I mean, that guy cannot miss from three. I haven't even checked the latest listings. He's going to be, what, top five in the NBA in three-point shooting percentage at this point?
I believe just top 10.
Top 10.
Nonetheless, a seven-footer in the top 10. He is on pace for the greatest percentage three-point shooting season by a seven-footer in NBA history. Sorry, Dirk Nowitzki. You are going to get knocked off your perch by Kelly Olynyk. Maybe. If he continues his current pace.
Like Tommy said, this guy could be better than Dirk. I'm telling you. I don't have nearly as much alcohol in my system necessary to do a good Tommy impression, but look,
I'll give you a Tommy point for it.
Awesome. So Kelly has been on fire, and one thing we were just talking about before we started recording here, we're starting to see Kelly get some more minutes because the rotations are starting to solidify, because the guys, as of right now, knock on wood, pray to whatever deity you want to pray to, guys are healthy. So Smart's healthy. He's back at full speed. Avery Bradley's healthy. So far, everything's going well. And Brad Stevens can start to play the style that he wants to play. So even in the losses where they lost to Dallas and they lost to Toronto, it wasn't like the losses that they had suffered a few weeks ago where the guys just didn't show up. Now, these guys didn't play defense, but that's another issue. But the rotations were such that they kind of played hard and they did their thing and they scored. They scored a lot of points. So they seem to be moving in a positive direction.
Yeah, this team is starting to play, I think, not just better, but more consistently good, which is obviously consistency has been a huge issue for them. Scoring has been, when Isaiah Thomas is on the bench especially, has been a monster issue for them. Over the last six games, which coincides with when they went to more small lineups, when they started playing Olynyk a bit more, and when Olynyk was draining like 70% of his three-pointers, they have an offensive rating of 106.9 without Isaiah Thomas on the court, which is the equivalent of, you know, a top five, top 10 type of offense, which is huge. If they can do that, and then with him on the court, they're at 110.3 offensive rating, which is even better. That's all of a sudden, this team is looking a lot more potent offensively. I think a lot of that has to do with Kelly Olynyk. Some of it has to do with small lineups. Some of it has to do with David Lee getting stapled to the bench.
Finally.
But yeah, this team is starting to look much better. Literally every single player on their team. So their net rating for, or offensive rating for the entire season, which is a number that is representative of how many points they would score per 100 possessions. Their net rating for the entire season is about, I believe, 101. I'm checking right now. It's 102.1. Now, every single player on their team who has been in the rotation over the last six games is at least 101 offensive rating. You've got Amir Johnson, who's at 114.5, Kelly Olynyk, Jared Sullinger, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, all above 110. This offense is finally starting to click, and they need Olynyk. They need him to play like he has. He's been a real difference maker over these last six games.
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying it all along, that, and I remember saying it over the summer, that a Kelly Olynyk leap forward would be monumental for this team. It might be the most important development for this team, because that gives you such a great option. However they decide to use him, start him off the bench, it just completely changes the entire dynamic of the offense. Because he can do so much that the slow motion drive to the basket has been so great.
That was so much fun the other day when he did like five or six of them.
That's so just fun.
Just slow motion to the hoop, like Paul Pierce on steroids. Because Pierce used to have that pace to him when he went to the hoop. Like that was Paul Pierce like with like 50 extra pounds on him, like Paul Pierce at like age 60, like to the hoop.
It looks so much slower than Pierce, though.
I mean, that was the most disrespectful thing I've ever said about Paul Pierce. But he gets there
somewhere between Brook Lopez and normal human speed. There, he's slightly above Brook Lopez moves, because Brook Lopez is the slowest guy I've ever seen make a move.
Hey, if you can be an offensive player like Brook Lopez, then you're a heck of an offensive player.
Yeah. Just seeing Olynyk drive, however fast he goes, get to the basket, finish, absorb contact, and finish. That, I don't think I've seen him do that at all, much less multiple times in a game. He usually stops somewhere around the block, up fakes and passes out. Like that's the Olynyk move. But for him to actually get to the rim and finish, sometimes go to the other side and finish on the other side of the rim, that is a nice wrinkle, because now you have to at least respect that. And he has the ability to put the ball on the floor. You have to respect his ability to dribble and the ability to pass and the ability to shoot. And all of that adds up to a real dangerous player on the floor. Now, the question is, can Kelly Olynyk deliver after all of that stuff happens with the defender? That's the big question. He's dangerous. Can he actually finish and be that dangerous player on a more consistent basis?
Brad Stevens brought up something interesting the other night, which is that Kelly Olynyk isn't like most other lottery picks. Most other lottery picks, they've been stars their whole lives. They were the stars for however many years they were in college, from the time they got to college until the time they were done. You know, they've been told for however long that they're going to be a lottery pick that they're that good. Kelly Olynyk was redshirted in college. I want to say he's the only lottery pick who has ever redshirted after or without medical reason for it. So his mentality may have just taken a while to grow. And he's coming from a different career arc than most guys who are older and spend time in college, because he hasn't been told, you know, you're the guy. And he just kind of burst onto the scene at Gonzaga. And so Stevens thinks he's kind of just taking time to become comfortable with what he can do and all of his gifts. And if he does continue to burst out and can make this consistent, it's a game changer, because he's a very, very, very good offensive player when he's engaged and when he's aggressive and when he's like fat Grandpa Paul Pierce going to the hoop. Yeah. So huge, huge, huge development for them if he can continue it.
Yeah.
Not just for this season, but for future seasons. I mean.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Now, this goes along to the stuff that I've been saying about his trade value. And
I think so you called him a perfect player last week, and I gave you a lot of crap for it.
But.
And then he played another damn good week. So, no, he's not the perfect player, but he looked closer to it last week.
He could be.
I don't know if he can still be the perfect player.
When I say the perfect player, I'm not saying that he's going to be like LeBron-ish or anything like that. What I'm saying is, in this league, 7-footer with those skills, like Draymond Green is like the perfect player for this league. Like that's. But, you know, I think Draymond is only just starting to get the respect that he deserves you and I and all the people that know, but they, you know, the casual fan, the people who are turning on, you know, primetime basketball and saying, oh, this guy looks pretty good. So, but anyway, let's leave it alone, because I don't want to have to explain myself every week. So the rotations are starting to solidify. Jonas Jerebko, let me say that again, is starting to shoot like Jerebko can shoot. And in fact, we got one of our Twitter comments with the hashtag Reigning Jays from Bailey. Do people finally realize Jerebko's worth? Versatile on D, can shoot the three, perfect small ball, big, in my opinion. So that's been a nice development, too.
Another perfect. We've got the perfect player in Kelly Olynyk and the perfect small ball big in Jonas Jerebko.
There we go.
So Rain and Jay is just throwing out the perfect term left and right.
I gotta get like the Mr. Perfect videos. This is where you splice in the Mr. Perfect old WWF promo videos where he just throws the pass. My favorite one is where he drops back and throws the long bomb and then runs and catches his own pass and then spikes it and says, perfect.
Yeah. So, by the way, the perfect small ball big is averaging 9.6 points per 36 minutes and shooting 39.4% from the field. But I'm kidding there, but he is versatile. He can switch on to point guards. He's shooting very, very well since that weird slump at the beginning of the season, which I think was partly because he was playing more small forward then. And he's not a small forward. Like that is not what he does. That is not how you're going to maximize him. But when he's at the four, you know, he stretches people out. He's a great cutter. I don't think enough people realize how much his cutting helps. When he's cutting to the hoop, it frees up everybody. I want to say the game against the Pacers. I'm not sure whether it was – I think it was last week, so we probably should have talked about this last week. There was a span with that bench unit. It was like cut, 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 and they were just slicing apart Indiana. And they don't have – the Celtics don't have the dribble penetrators. They don't have a lot of guys like Isaiah Thomas. And when he's off the court, they need to rely on cuts and sharp player movement. And Jarepko provides a lot of that. And he makes those like tip plays, the hustle plays. So he's definitely valuable. He's a lot better than David Lee. So it's good that he's getting those minutes. But perfect small ball big, he is not.
But yeah, we like to throw those big superlatives around.
But he's a good player. He's a good player. He's a valuable player.
Right.
And especially to these Celtics who don't have a lot of guys like that, where it's just either Jay Crowder or him, basically, when they want to go small.
Right. So things have been going pretty well. So since we're here, we're about midway through the season, let's do a completely original idea and hand out some midseason awards.
Nobody's ever done this in the
history
of life.
I understand if you need to pause the podcast and sit down because you're awed by our genius to come up with such an idea. We're going to let you take a breather because the first thing we're going to do is we're going to hand out the team MVP. All right? Whoa.
All
right. Team MVP. Jay, why don't you do the honors?
I am going to go. This is a lot tougher than I ever anticipated it would be at the beginning of the season. You know, coming into the season, you thought Isaiah Thomas, far and away, their most important player, most valuable player. It wasn't even close last year. After he got to the Celtics, he was the guy. This year, Jay Crowder has come up, and he's been great on both ends of the court. And all of a sudden, he can shoot threes, and he can get to the hoop, and his usage keeps climbing. And he's still a rugged defender who can guard. He's guarded people from Russell Westbrook to Zach Randolph. I'm going to go with Isaiah Thomas just because he is the only dynamic playmaker they have. And though Crowder is like kind of that only rugged wing they have, I think, I don't know. If you had to take out one of them, I think Bill Simmons was talking about this on his podcast recently. If you had to take out one of them, he said, like, if you had to choose which one was going to stay healthy and the other one was going to get injured, he said he might pick Crowder. I think...
To stay healthy.
Yes. I think the Celtics would have to want Thomas still, because I can't see their offense surviving without him. But could their defense survive without Crowder? Could their offense survive without Crowder? I don't know.
Right.
I'm still going with Isaiah Thomas.
You're going with Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Crowder.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really argue that. Crowder has been unreal.
Yeah. I think it's 1 and 1A. There's no wrong answer. And like you said, it's amazing that there is even a discussion when you looked at the roster coming in, because no one anticipated this level of offense from Crowder, but he's not just a 3-and-D guy. Like, he's a legitimate offensive option. So I think that the Celtics' entire team dynamic is so predicated on defense that he has to be the guy. I think that he's like the linchpin to the entire thing, because he allows that defense to do what it does. He's the guy that can switch on all of these pick and rolls. He's the guy that is really driving the whole energy of the defense. And then on offense, he has been, you know, I want to say, I'm trying to figure out a way to say it that's not just so gushing, but he has been an outlet that allows Isaiah Thomas to even do more offensively. And a lot of the passing numbers that Isaiah Thomas is generating have to go to Crowder. And so obviously Thomas is vitally important to this team on offense. I think Crowder just does so much on both ends of the floor that I'm really excited for what he can do down the line, because he's only just starting to realize this potential. This is the beginning of it, which is the most amazing thing. This is only the beginning, and that he still has things that he can develop offensively, and it doesn't seem to be affecting his defense. So From there, let's go to the most.
Hold on. I have one more note. Those two guys over the next couple of seasons will be making approximately $14 million between them, which will soon be less than Ryan Anderson money.
Yes, because Ryan Anderson is going to become a free agent at just the right time, and he's going to get big money because everybody's going to have cap space and everybody's going to have to outbid each other.
What a
great time to be an okay player in the NBA.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was interesting, by the way. Did you read the Crowder story on NBC Sports by my boy Dan Feldman? Crowder said that he turned down more money from other places to sign his deal with the Celtics.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So
that tells you a lot about the guy. And a lot of players wouldn't do that. And quite frankly, I don't think a lot of players appreciate when somebody does that, because that becomes an expectation that you'll take a hometown discount. And so it's fans love that stuff.
Yeah.
Fans love that stuff.
I have a quick story here. So the day he signed his contract, he had his whole family at the Celtics facility. He had his college coach there. And so at the end of the day, all the interviews are over. They had a press conference for like all the new signees, Amir Johnson, Jonas Jerebko. I believe David Lee was there, like just everybody. And so at the end of the day, I'm walking out. I just finished work. And Jay's there sitting, waiting, I think, for his car to pick him up, whether it was Uber or whatever. And he's just like staring off. And he has this like, I don't know if it was like a proud look or like some sort of like powerful look on his face. And I said to him, I said, this must be a heck of a day for you, huh? And he looks at me and like there was a pause there. And he said, one of the best of my life, man. And it was just a cool moment of like, wow, like $7 million a year. Like, yeah, he's drastically underpaid, but wow, that was a game changing contract for him. And a year ago this time, like, he was just a bit player. No, nobody ever would have thought he'd be making $7 million a year and now becoming one of the most valuable players for the Celtics. So just crazy, crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
The rise from Jay Crowder.
It's just amazing to think that the Rondo trade, where my initial reaction was, I'm not sure we got enough for Rondo, but, you know, Danny Ainge had to get what he could get. Like, that was, I think, the consensus. Like, probably, you know, if they had traded him earlier or whatever, he could have gotten more. But we'll take what we can get, I guess. And now one of those pieces becomes Jay Crowder, who has his impact this season is bigger than any impact Rondo's had since his injury. So, or as big.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing, amazing thing.
And the first round pick is still coming.
Man, that trade just keeps looking. But Danny Ainge has pulled off some amazing trades. Most improved. Our most improved player. God, you know, that's another one I could give to Crowder. But
it has to go to Crowder, right? There's nobody else who has improved. Definitely nobody has improved as much. If you want to give somebody else because like he's become too good, he's graduated from the most improved player award.
I think that's what I agree with you, because I'm sitting there, I'm trying to think like Crowder, who's improved more than Crowder? But in the interest of bringing up another name and not giving Crowder all of the hardware, which we will mail to, I'm going to mail the trophy out to you. I'll say Kelly Olynyk, just for the strides that he's made, you know, up to this point, all the stuff that we talked about earlier. I'm going to give it to him in the hopes that he continues this style of play, because it's this Olynyk that we've seen over the past 2 weeks is very much improved over the Olynyk that we've had in the past. And I think putting him, this makes him probably the second or third most dangerous offensive player on the team. So I'll say Kelly Olynyk for most improved.
I'm going to switch it up here, and some people might disagree because he had pretty long slump. I'm going to go with Avery Bradley. I think for the course of the season, I think he's been better and more improved, I think, than Kelly Olynyk. When you look at their offense, part of it is because he's been on the floor with Isaiah Thomas a lot. But Isaiah Thomas, when Avery Bradley isn't on the court, has been a much less effective player. I think Avery Bradley's spacing is huge. His ability to come off screens is huge. He has become a better shooter every year. He's at 36% from the arc this year, taking a lot of tough shots. He's become a really good shooter, and they need that. So I'm going to go with Avery. And he's also improved, like subtly improved, his passing game and his ball handling game to the point where, you know, he can now come off screens and not really like be a playmaker, but when they send more pressure his way, he knows how to handle it and he can make offensive opportunities for other guys. I just think he's been really big for both their offense and their defense this year with the way he forces turnovers too. So if we're discounting Crowder just because he's too good for the most improved, I would go with Avery Bradley there. I think he's been more important to their team than most people realize.
Okay. I'll give you that. I will say that I did notice the other day that his ball handling, it's not terrible anymore, which is huge because it was horrible.
And he's become much better as a passer too, like learning how, like the pocket passes and like sometimes he like throws those lobs over his head that he never would have been able to do that in the past years.
Yeah, no. So, okay, I can say I would still love to see Avery Bradley not take those super long twos because those drive me nuts.
Yeah, although he is taking a higher percentage of his shots are threes this year, which he keeps adding to that. So,
but
I agree. Those long twos will drive you crazy. The long twos have been an issue for this team. Less of an issue, I would say, this year, but kind of like sneaking up as more of an issue lately, I feel like. So maybe we should talk about the long twos. Should we go into a rant about the long twos right now? Because long twos almost killed them against Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, a rant. Yes, let's do a rant.
Let's
the long twos. Look, Bradley, guilty. Sullinger, guilty. Who else is guilty of those?
Smart can be guilty. Turner is almost always guilty. Turner's weird because that's his shot. Like
that's his offense.
Yeah, and so obviously it's not the most efficient form of offense, but it's better than him shooting a three.
Yes. I mean, I would rather him dribble down the court, throw the ball 30 feet into the stands, and run the other way than take a three, because that at least will let you set your defense. Like, that's how bad he is at three. Like, he just dribbled and said, I'm going to shoot a three. No, I'm going to punt this thing up into the balcony. That is much more palatable than the three-point shot. But no, the long two, and especially from Bradley, because what ends up happening is he is run off of the three, and his instinct is to take one dribble and step into the next shot, which is one step over the three-point line. If you're going to do that, just drive. Just try to get to the hoop. At least get within 10 feet. Take something that's a little closer. You know, take another two dribbles or work the ball around. And Sullinger, who we were talking about this before the we started recording. Sullinger's so frustrating, but he's so important. He does so many things. Like against, we were looking at the Chicago game. His numbers against Chicago looked great. 18 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, a block, plus 20. But all I could remember was the long twos that he kept taking. He shot 42%, and you said before, he's the worst shooting big man in the league. And it's not even close.
I mean, from three, he's a bad shooter. He's not that bad from mid-range, but you don't want anyone shooting the mid-range jumpers except the elite shooting big men. And so, yeah, you don't, when their offense starts to bog down, too often it's guys just settling for long twos. And you can't have that. Get to the hoop. Stop settling. Create offense for other guys. Create three-point looks. Drive and dish. Don't settle for long, especially the early in the shot clock ones. Those are the ones that kill you. And a lot of the times, those long shots lead to long rebounds, which lead to easy offense the other way. And you just can't have that early in the shot clock. Work harder, get better shots so that you don't have the offensive lulls like the one that almost killed them against Chicago in the fourth quarter the other day when Sullinger shot too many long twos. And he had a really good game. Like, as you said, he was a plus 20. He owned the glass, five assists, he was great. And he still almost killed them by shooting too many long twos. Stop with the long twos, guys, especially the bad shooters. Stop giving shots to bad shooters. Bad shooters, Evan Turner, Jared Sullinger, Marcus Smart. Pass it to Kelly Olynyk. Pass it to Isaiah Thomas. Pass it to guys who can score efficiently, because when their offense bogs down, it's because too many of the shots are going to guys who aren't efficient scorers. So
I've said that in situations like this, when those guys are on the floor and you know that they're prone to taking the long two, what if Brad Stevens scripted those possessions a little bit more? That if he took more of control from the sidelines and created some sort of set where you're doing like a screen and then a rescreen, and you're letting a guy like Marcus Smart get to the basket a lot more, or something.
Well, the problem is it's tough to get to the basket when people know you can't shoot.
True.
When everyone's sagging off you, it's tough. It's really tough to get to the basket. And so I think that's an issue that some of those lineups with Smart, with Turner, with Sullinger have run into, because it is a lot tougher to get to the basket when guys don't need to guard you. But they need to find their better shooters more often. And I think a big part of the reason for their struggling three-point percentage as a team is that they don't get the right guy's shots all the time.
Right. Well, I'm gonna send the show completely off the rails and just say that with Marcus Smart healthy and Avery Bradley healthy, there's no need for Evan Turner to play. So
I mean,
why not put R.J. Hunter in?
I mean, right now they have a 9-man rotation. Do you want to go to 8? R.J. Hunter, like, yeah, he shows, like, a little bit of promise. He shot 30% from 3 last year in college. I want to say he's at around 30 right now. I don't have his stats up right now. I want to say he's at something like 30 this season. He's not really a shooter, and he doesn't give you too much else. And he doesn't have the defensive versatility that Turner has. So Hunter's shown flashes. I don't think he's ready yet. I mean, the Red Claws have lost like 4 straight games with both him and Terry Rozier. So
I don't care. I don't care. I don't want Evan Turner playing anymore.
John does not want Turner on the court.
Our sixth man award, you're going to give it to Evan Turner, aren't you?
No.
it's gonna have to go to Marcus Smart, I think.
I would probably give it to Olynyk.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
let's give Olynyk 2 awards. We just sat here and said Jay Crowder can't have 2 awards. We'll give it to Olynyk.
See, I gave Avery Bradley the most improved, and see, now I'm sitting pretty with Kelly Olynyk as my sixth man. I don't have to give him 2 awards because I didn't give him the other one.
Fine. I'll give mine to Marcus Smart.
I mean, you could give Olynyk too. Olynyk could get 2 Rain and Jay's awards.
I guess.
He's been raining a lot of Jays, you know.
He has. It would have been nice to have, you know, if everybody had been healthy, it probably would have been Avery Bradley as the sixth man. Whatever. I'll say Marcus Smart. Most overlooked. Let's get this. Let's move this thing along. Most overlooked player. I'm gonna say Amir Johnson, because we keep looking at these numbers, and Amir Johnson, when he's in there, the defense is better. Is so much better. He's the rim defender that the Celtics need to really move their defense along. And put, I think he's probably their second most important defender behind Jay Crowder. You can say Avery Bradley, but it's close. So people don't really talk much about Amir Johnson, and I think that he's really that important to the defense. So I'm going to give it to him.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think he's struggled a little bit at the start of the season. I think maybe it was, I don't know if it was physically or it was just really tough to come from a system where they didn't ice a lot of ball screens in Toronto to Boston, where they ice a lot of screens. And icing, for those who don't know, is when you force the ball handler away from the screen and the big man kind of like slides over the other way to shut off penetration. So that's drastically different than the way he used to defend ball screens. And he probably had to figure out a whole new set of rotations, a whole new way to play defense. And so it was an adjustment for him, but he's really come on lately. And before missing the last game for personal reasons, which haven't been explained, hopefully everything's okay. But yeah, Amir Johnson, I think he's a clear, to me, unsung player, just because nobody ever talks about him. In every game, he's impactful.
Yeah. I think so. Let's give him a reigning Jays award, which would be what, like a J with like a shower head over it. We can get like a little kind of like a little pond, like, and you just rain. Never mind.
I don't know about the shower head, man. The shower head. We don't want to give shower head. Like, come on,
it's raining yeah, on the J.
I'd rather have like fierce storm clouds.
Yeah,
and just like lightning. Like real cool looking, because obviously it's got to be cool looking to represent us.
I was going more campy with it.
Yeah, we're not going campy, John. We're badass. Reigning Jays are badass.
The predominant Celtics podcast. We do. We're not just the Reigning Jays. R-A-I. We're the reigning R-E-I-G-N.
Yeah,
reigning Jays.
By the way. We need to talk about that. We had some peasants, some podcast peasants throwing stones at the throne the other day. We're not even going to name them. Well, we hear what you guys say, and you
stones
guys
at the throne. I love it.
You guys are peasants compared to us. Everyone is a peasant compared to us. Get out of here. We run the Celtics podcast scene, and nobody's even close. We are the most entertaining, the most informative, the goddamn best Celtics podcast there is.
Damn right.
Yeah.
Damn right. You know,
we should give ourselves a Reigning Jays award.
That's right. Best podcast. Who's your pick for best podcast, Jay?
Best mother effing podcast by far. That's us. That's us.
This is totally a WWE thing. Like, this is going to end in a tag team, no rules match. Tables, ladders, and chairs. It's going to happen this July. Oh, yeah, this July it's going to happen. That was the worst Macho Man Randy Savage. Let's get to the All-Star game because we're really off the rails. The All-Star game. Kudos to the fans for voting Kyle Lowry into the All-Star game rather than Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's a really good player, obviously, but he missed most of this season, and Kyle Lowry – The hometown guy, really good point guard in a league of a lot of good point guards. But what that did, as Jay has said multiple times on our show, it now allows a guard that deserves to make the team to actually make the team. It's one guy. You can leave Kyrie Irving off the team. So what do you think the odds now, Jay, that Isaiah Thomas gets one of those spots?
I think they're pretty good. Other coaches know how important he has been to the Celtics offense. I can remember going into the Golden State locker room last year, and this was like maybe a month, maybe even less, after Thomas got traded to the Celtics. And they had Isaiah Thomas's name written on the backboard, it was underlined. It was in big block letters. Like, they know he's the key. Everyone knows Isaiah Thomas is the key. You have to stop him to stop the Celtics. And that's important, I think. There aren't a lot of guys like that. He's one of them. He scores efficiently. He's become a better playmaker. He doesn't turn the ball over a lot. He has run their offense. He has been their offense since, really, he got to their team last season. I think he should have won Sixth Man of the Year last year. I think he will be an All-Star this year. I think it would have been really close, and maybe it would have gone the other way if Kyrie Irving had been voted in. But the fans did right. They voted Lowry in. And they almost voted Zaza in. I wish if Zaza Pachulia had been voted in as an All-Star starter and Draymond Green and Kawhi Leonard had not, that would have been hysterical. Zaza's not even like one of these fan favorite guys. He's not Jeremy Lin where he's getting like the votes from China. He's not like he's just Zaza. He's the most random guy who came 14,000 votes. I don't know who was supporting him. Who were sending out all these NBA votes for Zaza Pachulia? Whoever it was.
Some radio station must have done something. Somebody had to say, you know what? You know what would be funny if we voted Zaza into the game? I don't know what happened, but someone must have made this joke. They came really close.
Zaza Pachulia. If Zaza Pachulia had gotten the vote.
Kobe Bryant and Zaza, Western Conference All-Star starters.
That would have been probably the worst starting duo in in NBA All-Star history. Completely fine with Kobe starting as like a career thing. But I also think if you're going to do that, like KG, Tim Duncan, those guys should start. But if this is their last year, nobody knows it yet.
Why was Kobe Bryant listed as a forward? He's never been a forward. I don't know.
That's a good question.
I also think Isaiah Thomas is going to get in. There's no way. You can't not have a Celtic on that team right now. The Celtics are currently a playoff team. If you look at the standings, there's four teams with the same record all tied for like basically the fifth seed, essentially. You'd have to go into tiebreakers with Indy, Detroit, Boston, and Miami. So, and they're all within a couple of games of being in the top half of the conference. So a couple of Hawks losses, a couple of Celtics wins, and next thing you know, you've got, by the All-Star break, potentially a fourth seed. And you can't have a fourth seed without an All-Star. So I think Isaiah Thomas is in. And, you know, again, we could make the argument, and I've seen people make the argument, that you gotta consider Jay Crowder at some point. I don't think Jay Crowder is going to be named by the coaches. But when we start looking at the alternates, if a couple of guys get hurt or have to withdraw, then you start getting into that interesting, well, maybe Crowder might have a shot. So I think we'll definitely have one. We may have two. And however many we have, they will be coached by Tyronn Lue, head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, after they somehow decided that this was the right time to fire their head coach at a point in the season at which they've had a better record than any point in their franchise's history before the All-Star break. David Blatt out in Cleveland. Tyronn, and the best part about this, Cavs lost last night. If the Cavs are struggling a little bit, I would love to see Tyronn Lue be the head coach of the All-Star team with a personal losing record.
that was just weird, wasn't it? They must have known that David Blatt. They must have known all the issues with David Blatt before. To do this now, midway through the season, it's just weird. Unless I just don't get it. I'm not going to sit here and say they're crazy for doing it, because obviously there was some behind the scenes stuff going on. Obviously, you saw LeBron James' press conference. He didn't come out and say, yeah, I agree with this, but it was clear he wanted Blatt out, and he kind of supported Tyronn Lue. And obviously he's going to. He's basically running things over there. He has to be running things over there. He's on a one-year contract. You have to please him. You have to keep him around. They're just a weird team right now.
Yeah.
Like, they're by far the class of the East. I don't think anyone's close. I don't think anyone will give them a shot a real competition in the East as long as they stay healthy. But I also don't feel like they have a shot against anyone from the West, whether it's San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Golden State. I don't feel like they really have a chance to win in that series. I feel like the Western Conference Finals is the NBA Finals this year. Unless something happens. And maybe that's why they did it. Maybe, you know, they have to win a title. And maybe they thought Ty Lue, turning him into the coach, was the way to give their team a little bit more life and to maybe free up parts of Kevin Love's game that have been dormant and to get LeBron back on board. Bizarre couple of days. Tyronn Lue saying that David Blatt should coach the All-Star team might have been my favorite quote of the season. imagine, like, come on.
Coach.
And he's going to go and coach, like, LeBron James and the all. Come on, after LeBron, like still got the blood on the knife from stabbing him in the back. Oh man,
it would be hilarious. If
that would be unreal.
That would so you put Blatt out there. The game starts, and then the first whistle, he subs LeBron out, and he doesn't play anymore.
Yeah, except LeBron would sub himself back in like he's done so many times in Cleveland. That would be incredible. That would be incredible.
I tried to read as much as I could about that situation because when Woj dropped the ultimate Woj bomb when this happened, you start to say, well, what's the background? And you hear David Griffin talk about why, and he's saying things like, I know when something's not working. You can see on the outside, basically saying on the outside, you know, the record's great, but on the inside, I know it's not working. And you hear some of the stories that it's funny that he was too coddling of the superstars in the team. And he's got that reputation of not being the greatest X's and O's guys out of timeouts. So who knows how much of that is true or exaggerated or in a very Red Sox like fashion. When the guy goes out the door, you start trashing him to make it seem like it's justified, which the Boston Red Sox do, that ownership group does. That could be what's going on here. But for whatever reason, they thought that this was the case. And I read somewhere that Blatt had told his friends in Israel, where he's one of the most successful coaches of all time, that he had the feeling it's either me or Kevin Love. And it was him. It might still be Kevin Love. So... this will bring us into our Twitter questions because Brian Smith asks, what's the most you'd give up for Kevin Love? Would you do Crowder straight up? So here I've heard Crowder's name. Zach Lowe has mentioned it, that you don't get Kevin Love without giving up Jay Crowder. So personally, I'm not involved in that at all. I'm not giving up Jay Crowder. I know Kevin Love. What he can be, I know what he's been in Cleveland, and maybe the stuff he's been doing in Cleveland is throwing me off, but I would rather have what we have here than give up a lot of these assets for a guy that can't play defense. You can't, he can't guard centers. He can't, you have to hide him. So not only are we giving up our best defender for a complete non-defender, that we're giving it up for a guy that you have to use a certain way. So I gotta say, I'm out of the Kevin Love sweepstakes.
I say this with all due respect to Jay Crowder, who has been very good. You can't just look at the Cleveland years, because the Cleveland year and a half for Kevin Love has gone drastically wrong. They have used him like a spot-up shooter. They have completely, completely diminished his talent. This guy averaged 26 and 14 or 26 and 12, whatever it was, 2 years ago. And he was doing it efficiently. He was an absolute menace every time he hit the court. 26 and 12.
Okay.
If you could add a guy like that with just by trading one man, Crowder, I mean, I'm not saying I do it automatically, but come on. Like, Kevin Love is – he was crazy good 2 years ago. He was unbelievable as an offensive player, as a rebounder. You can't just dismiss that. And, yeah, like – you have to use him in a certain way. Brad Stevens would use him in that way. Brad Stevens, it'd be like the Isaiah Thomas thing where he was behind a few guys in Phoenix, not in the best situation for him, shows up in Boston, all of a sudden he's the feature piece and they're running everything through him. And man, he looks good. Kevin Love, I mean, I don't, maybe his body is diminished, maybe the knee problems, the back problems, whatever else have actually hurt him. He's 27 years old. 2 years ago, he was absolutely unreal. You have to think about it. You have to.
So what does it take? I mean, it obviously wouldn't take just Jay Crowder, because Cleveland, if you're sitting there and you're saying, okay, here's this guy who 2 years ago was awesome, fine, I get that. I admit, like, I'm overvaluing our own guys and undervaluing him. I know I'm doing that.
No. I mean, the thing is, Kevin Love, I think, is a better basketball player than Jay Crowder, but he also has a contract that's three times as expensive, three times as rich.
So, right. So what are we going to do moving forward? Are we going to, we can get this guy in here. That's fine. We're basically putting he's our superstar. He's our number one. And it would not just be Jay Crowder. They would want more than that. Because if you have this guy and you're dangling him out there, other teams will be bidding for him. So it'll be Crowder. It might take Olynyk. It might take a couple of draft picks and one of our rookies. You know, Rozier, Hunter, Mickey, one of those guys. I'm, again, I know I'm overvaluing our own guys, but when you look at the contracts, when you look at everything, the way it's going, the chemistry, the way everything's working, I'd rather have multiple players doing the different things that they do than have Kevin Love. I've just soured on Love so much that I would rather have the guys that we have doing what they do, especially if Crowder and Olynyk are improving at the rate they're improving. If those guys can continue this arc, then I think that's just more valuable moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough one because Love does have defensive deficiencies. He has had a tough year and a half in Cleveland. He's still really good, and he was great 2 years ago. I mean, great, great, really, really, really great 2 years ago. So that's a tough one. And that's one of those things where if you don't want to go after Kevin Love, who are you going to want to go after? Who is the star going to be that shakes free that you're okay with? If Kevin Love isn't good enough, who is?
Well, I don't know. We'll have to see.
That's the thing.
Market.
Like
that. And I know that. This is how it goes. That I like where the Celtics are at, and I know that there's this mythical 2 years down the road superstar that will somehow be available and tie everything together. I don't know what that is. I'm not taking the GM's long term view. I'd be a terrible GM. I admit that. I'd be a horrible GM.
And you went to Emerson, John. Emerson is the home of the GM.
Let me tell you something. There's a reason why I'm sitting here in my bedroom doing a podcast and those other guys from Emerson are running teams, because I would be the con of GMs. My problem is I develop emotional attachments to these guys. And to be a good GM, you have to separate yourself and look at these guys as basically slabs of meat that you just trade and, you know, determine their value. And it's hard. It's hard to sit there and say, objectively, you look at the numbers and you say, this is what Jay Crowder has done. You told that story about Jay Crowder sitting there staring off into the distance and saying, this is one of the best days of his life. And I'm like, I got like the emoticon, the emoji, like heart eye thing. Like, that's like, I'm like, oh, I love Jay Crowder now. How can you trade Bay Crowder? Like, that's, you can't do that. Like, he's now the emotional motor guy that you need on a team. The gritty guy, like the heart and soul of this team. Like, this is the guy that is the engine. He's the emotional guy that I think you need on a basketball team to succeed.
Question. What were your initial thoughts on the Kevin Garnett trade? This is random. I just want to know.
Oh,
initial thoughts right away.
My initial thought right away is that we gave up too much for him. So, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can go back. I'm sure it's Googleable. I was initially in the rumor stage when all of those things were being discussed and all of these players. Al Jefferson is Jay Crowder is Al Jefferson. To me, I was like, here's Al Jefferson. Look at how good he can be. He's blah, 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 blah. And as soon as Kevin Love walked through the door, I mean, not Kevin Love, Kevin Garnett walked through the door and did that news conference, I was like, I'm completely wrong. It didn't even take him playing for me to realize it. As soon as he sat there with Pierce and Ray Allen, I was like, I'm completely wrong. This is awesome. We're absolutely going to win a title. So it could happen like that with Kevin Love. That's just,
I mean, he's not as good as Kevin Garnett was.
No, but he can be a superstar player.
But that's amazing that you didn't love the Kevin Garnett trade right away.
No,
and that you thought like Al Jefferson, Delonte West, who else was in that trade? Gerald Green. Like, they gave away.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, wow,
they gave away a bunch of slop though.
Yeah, and I was like, well, we're going to have no bench. We're going to have these three guys, and then the bench. I was like, this isn't going to work. How is this going to work? And then as soon as I saw him, I'm like, this is totally going to work. Well, we got it. No problems. We'll figure it out. So, yes, if we got Kevin Love, I'm sure Brad Stevens, who is by far the best coach that Kevin Love will have ever played for, will figure it out. And I'm sure that running an offense with Isaiah Thomas and Kevin Love and the dribble handoffs and all of those things that you could run with Kevin Love would make this offense. It would just change the dynamic of this team. They just wouldn't be a defense first team. They would be, you know, you would have to rely on Smart and Bradley to be, you know, your big time defenders. And you would have to, I don't know how the rotations would go. I'm sure it'd be fine, but my emotional state right now is such that I do not want to give up Jay Crowder. I just don't, and I know that's what it would take. So, another question, since we're on the Cavs, comes in from at @mcash201. Is Mozgov on the Celtics radar for as far as a trade goes? I can't see Mozgov fitting what the Celtics are doing. I don't know. I would say no.
I like Mozgov as a player. Yeah. I mean, adding another big just doesn't feel like it makes a lot of sense. What's his contract? Is he in the last year of his contract?
I'll have to check.
Adding another big, I don't think makes too much sense. They need scoring. They need shooting. They don't need as much as I like Mozgov. I just don't know if he's the type of guy you want to target.
I think if the Celtics are going to trade for a big, it's going to be a better big than Mozgov, because they're trying to consolidate the front court and not just add to it. And I don't think you do a 2-for-1 trade for Mozgov. Let me look. I got their salary. So, yes, he's in the last year of his deal. So,
yeah, that's another thing.
So, I mean,
trading for a free agent.
No.
Why?
No. So, I guess our answer is no. I would say he's not on the radar. Bailey asks, do you expect the Seas to trade some of their 2016 picks before the deadline, or do they wait until the draft? As always,
they will be looking.
Yeah, I think that's the standard answer, that Danny Ainge is always on the phone, and I would expect, do we expect it? It's hard to say whether we expect it. I think if Danny Ainge had his way, yes. Not the Brooklyn pick, unless there's a superstar involved, but I'm sure the Dallas pick, maybe the Celtics' own pick, the Minnesota.
Yeah. Brooklyn is starting to look bad again, by the way. Really, yeah. Really bad.
Yeah. Lost nine of their last 10.
Lost five straight.
Philly is starting to look not the worst team in the league anymore. Like they're still pretty bad, but they've
Philly
won games.
Is sneaky, not completely historically terrible anymore. And LA is kind of like, no, they stink. I can't give LA any type of credit. They stink.
It's going to be funny that Ish Smith is going to be. You know what? We're going to revisit these awards, because maybe the Celtics team MVP will be Ish Smith for raising the Philadelphia 76ers up just high enough to drop Brooklyn below them. If he does that and Brooklyn gets the number one pick, we're going to send Ish Smith our reigning Jays award with the cool Thunderbolts and the clouds and the lightning and all that stuff.
Those lottery standings will be interesting, because Phoenix has incentive to tank. Minnesota has incentive to tank. Brooklyn has no incentive to tank. And they're only right now like 2.5 games above both those other teams I mentioned. So, I mean, we'll see. Brooklyn might be bad enough that they don't have to tank, but it'll be interesting to see what happens there and how much that affects Boston's pick.
Yeah, but Minnesota, I don't think Minnesota is going to tank, because they have, they're looking at, like, Sam Mitchell is trying to win games. You know what I mean? Like, he wants to.
What I heard is the Timberwolves are tanking. As soon as he said Sam Mitchell is trying to win games, I heard the Timberwolves are tanking. It might as well be the same thing.
But look, and you got KG on that team, and he's just not gonna stand for that. There's no way he's gonna stand for it.
Yeah, you know, but they've been bad lately. And imagine if they win the lottery. Ooh, all of a sudden, Towns, Wiggins, Simmons, or Brandon Ingram, whoever it is. Wow. That already with Towns and Wiggins, those guys do things every night that you're like, whoa. Did you see that dunk by Towns?
No.
Oh, my goodness. So
when was this, last night?
Yeah. Whoever is listening to this podcast, go immediately find the Vine of Karl Towns. Like, he catches it in transition, dribbles through the defense. This is a 7-footer, like 19-20-year-old 7-footer.
I'm like, going to search for it right now.
Does a scissor kick in the air, just rips down the rim. It was unreal. Like, unreal dunk. You look at that and you're like, oh, God, that guy is going to be a menace pretty soon.
So NBA and ESPN, Karl Towns maybe the most powerful dunk of the season. So we'll get my live reaction as soon as it pops up here.
I hear this one. I sat there like, whoa. I watched it like 15 times last night. Wait till you see this. It is wow. Wow. I mean, that is no normal 7-footer. That is a special man.
Oh, wait shit. For it.
Yeah.
He was just dribbling up. Who was trying to defend him? He just got out of the way.
Yeah.
Was that Gobert? Were they playing? No, they were playing the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
So it was Harrison Barnes who just got the hell out of the way.
Matt Barnes.
Oh, Matt Barnes. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, wrong team there. But,
wrong team.
I mean, That's what that dunk will make you do. It makes you forget who's on teams. It makes right. you like that is a powerful dunk, man.
Matt Barnes, who might be the biggest goddamn idiot in the league, by the way, just as an aside. What a dummy.
Yeah, when keeping it real goes wrong. Wasn't that the skit Dave Chappelle used to have?
Yes. Let's fly through some of these because we're starting to run low on time here. Let's fly through some of these Twitter questions. Brian, provided they make it, who's more likely to play a role in the playoff series, RJ Hunter or James Young?
None of them.
Okay, neither. But let's pretend, for the sake of the question, that the Celtics are forced to use one of these guys. Who would Brad Stevens choose? We don't want to be in this situation, but he's got to make a choice.
I would have said Hunter earlier in the season. It seems like Young has kind of passed him in the rotation lately, but I don't know.
Flip a coin.
Hunter, maybe?
I mean, obviously I'm on the Hunter train, so I think Hunter's shooting would put him out there. But if we got to that point where the Celtics are having problems. But I'll say Hunter. Diane asks, which free agents does Boston retain this summer? So interesting question, because potential free agents, are we going to consider Amir Johnson a free agent? He's not.
He could be.
He could be. But when you look at the potential free agents, he's under contract. That's just the Celtics exercising an option. So that's not retaining a free agent. I think we're talking about Sullinger, Zeller, the guys who are restricted free agents. I would say that Zeller is done.
Although he could be really cheap. You know, like he could be playing himself out of a big contract. And especially in this scenario, he could be pretty cheap. It all depends what happens, right? I mean, right now they have one big man under contract for next year, and that's Kelly Olynyk. Amir Johnson has a team option.
Yep.
Sullinger, Tyler Zeller are restricted free agents. David Lee is going to be gone.
We can safely say that they will not retain David Lee.
We're going to go with they will not retain David Lee. Other than that, I have no clue, to be honest. I mean, a lot of it depends on this trade deadline. A lot of it depends on what the draft is looking like. There are so many factors that go into that. I think, to an extent, they like all their guys, including Zeller, even though he's been banished to the dungeon for most of this season. Like, they have respect for Zeller and what he can do for a team. The problem with their team is they just have too many bigs right now, and he's been, for the most part, one of the guys left out. He made some big plays against Chicago. For the first time in a while, he finally made some good plays. He's looked out of sorts when he's been on the court. He hasn't been nearly as productive as he was last year. And I think a lot of that confidence probably not in game shape, because it's tough to stay in game shape when you're only playing like a few minutes here and there once every other week or whatever it is. So,
yeah, that's something that people don't really talk about. I'm glad you brought that up, because to be out there and playing in an NBA game when you don't play in an NBA game is hard. And when you get out there and all of a sudden you get 15 minutes when you get 0 minutes and probably not a lot of practice reps, he's probably
This month they've had like 7 or 8 road games already and a ton of back-to-backs. They've hardly practiced at all this month. Maybe 2 practices this month.
Yeah.
And like that's tough for a guy who doesn't play at all. That's really like
– you get to the team hotel and pop on a treadmill? And just run?
I mean, they open up gyms for them wherever they are. The practice facility in Waltham is always open. But, yeah, it's tough.
You just get to, like, the Sheraton in Dallas, and you just walk into the exercise room, and there's Tyler Zeller trying to get a run in. I would not be surprised if the Celtics made him the qualifying offer. If the offers out there aren't where he wants them to be, where his agent wants them to be, I wouldn't be surprised if Zeller signed the qualifying offer and just played one more year and left as a free agent or explored total free agency, unrestricted free agency, the following summer.
I don't know. It's tough to sign the qualifying offer with the team that benched you and put that to risk, you know, like, there will be offers for him because this free agency class isn't great. Money's going to be flying around. And teams know that he can be valuable. Teams saw what he did last year. They know he hasn't just magically gotten worse this year. So right. I would be really surprised if he does that, to come back, because that means you're risking your next contract on the following season and betting on yourself. And how do you bet on yourself when you've been benched all season? You know, that's tough.
Right. No, it's tough. You are betting on yourself. It would have to be strictly that he's not getting the offers. Obviously, if the offers are coming in from other teams that are good or good enough, then I would expect him to sign an offer sheet from someone else. But if they're not, then I wouldn't be surprised if he did bet on himself. How much worse is it going to be? And then you're in a $100 million cap situation, and you're still a young guy. The money will be inflated, and you can just as a bench guy make more money than you would this summer. I'm just speculating. Again, I'm a terrible GM.
Although, hey, in your defense, when you were saying that other Emerson guys are running a team, I don't think you would have given Enes Kanter that much money, and I don't think you'd have Deion Waiters as your crunch time shooting guard, John.
That's true. That's true.
So give yourself a little credit there.
I'm okay. So I could, maybe I'm not a bad, maybe I'm a good GM.
Yeah, you'd be a good GM. Yeah.
I would have to be locked in a room. I like players. I sit there and be like, no, I can't trade this guy because he's a really good guy and we need him on the team. You'd be like, he hasn't played in 2 years. He's the end of the bench. Like, no, I like him. Find somebody else.
Yeah, Kevin McHale calls. Hey, would you like Kevin Garnett? No!
No!
No, Al
what
Jefferson.
Are you, nuts?
I need Al Jefferson and Ryan Gomes.
I was a big Ryan Gomes fan.
Yeah, I bet you were, John. I bet you were.
Benjamin asks, if an Olenek fell in the forest and no one was around to hear it, would it make a sound?
It would make a swish sound. Swish.
And Alex asked a question. It kind of confused me, actually, because he says Jay Crowder has looked gimpy for a while, which I haven't seen. But he said, should the Celtics consider sitting him for a prolonged time, or are standings an issue? And if they are, should they be considering our perceived ceiling? I haven't noticed, other than the Chicago game when he was sick, that Jay Crowder has looked gimpy.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that either. Now I'm going to be on the lookout for it. I don't know. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen signs of it. I thought he's been really consistent lately and played really good basketball. But maybe.
I got to look for it.
Yeah.
I was saying that of Sullinger, where if he's having wrist issues or some other issues, then sit him. If anybody's having a nagging injury, I would rather sit him for a couple of games and get him right. And then... So, but I'll have to look for the Crowder stuff. I haven't noticed. Before we go, here's my rant that I've seen a lot of this going on Twitter. I've heard it on other podcasts. We're at a time right now where people are comparing eras for some reason. And I said a little bit of this on Twitter last night. It bugs me when people do this because they always do it the wrong way. They say if Shaq went back to the 60s and played against Bill Russell, he would destroy Bill Russell because Russ was so thin and Shaq is so strong, and it just would, they just couldn't do this. If they played against each other, Shaq is just too dominant. And the thing that I always say when we're comparing eras is, if you're going to compare the eras, you've got to completely dive into the whole thing. And is Shaq going back to the 60s? And if he is, then he's going to be part of that era's mindset. There's no weightlifting in the 60s, all right? Wilt Chamberlain was the most dominant player of that era as far as strength and power. And if Wilt Chamberlain played today with the nutrition and the emphasis on strength and conditioning, think of what kind of monster he would be. He was as amazing a physical specimen. And did he ever lift weights? They didn't lift weights. They didn't have their own gyms. They didn't have a practice facility that you know, you didn't have strength and conditioning coaches. So if Shaq went back then, he'd be like Wilt, probably. Naturally strong, naturally gifted. And Russ did okay against Wilt. Like, they had their battles, but I think Russ did all right. And if Russ came to this era, what would he look like? Jared Wade of 8.9 seconds made a great comment to my tweet where he said, be Ben Wallace-y. Think about a 6'9 Bill Russell with the emphasis on strength and conditioning, sitting there with Brian Dew, getting in the weight room, eating right, doing all of this stuff it takes to get that current NBA body. I would bet Bill Russell would look pretty big. He'd get pretty jacked. And I think he would hold his own against the bigger, stronger guys. And so whenever we're comparing players from different eras, you really have to dive in and say, what was the mentality of that era? And I think ultimately the bottom line is the superstars of any era would be fine in any other era. And that's just Bob Cousy would be fine today. He'd figure out a way to be what he was. The big stars, the superstars, no matter what era you're in, will find a way to be great at that time. So I just a thing I needed to say. I've seen a lot of it, and it just bugs me because people just take a very short-sighted view of it. That's my rant.
But how much did Shaq really lift? How much time did Shaq spend on that body? He was the one guy who should have been like all those other guys. Obviously, I agree with your rant, most of it.
Most of it.
No, I just don't care for comparisons at all. Who cares?
Right.
What Bill Russell would look like today? The guy won 11 championships. Just let that
appreciate
stand.
It. Yeah. Appreciate it.
If you win 11 championships and you grab 50 rebounds in a game, just let it be, man. Yeah. Why do we have to go dig up his accomplishments and spit on him?
Yeah.
Because it's a new era and people have developed as people always develop. Let's just
They just want to trash him. People want to trash him. Like, nah, look at what he did. He did it against all these scrubs. Eh, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I'm with you, John. Strong rant.
We did another rant. We had another story time from Jay. That was fantastic.
There you go. Another Rain and Jay's podcast. Best mother effing Celtics podcast out there. All the other peasants slinging stones, get out of here. You got nothing on us.
Got nothing. Nothing. All right. So we'll see you next week then on the Rain and Jay's podcast. Bye. Bye. Bye.